Hello and welcome to Backstage at the Miskatonic Playhouse. Tonight, I have with me Leslie XP Lovecat Horn. Leslie, say hi, let us know who you are, what you do, where we can find you.
Yeah, so I am a YouTuber for role-playing games. I usually talk about different systems and scenario reviews on my channel, as well as general GMing advice. And then I also am a developmental editor for both role-playing games and fiction books. So really enjoy working with creators and helping to lift them up.
Amazing, amazing. Well, I think, and it's because you posted about it recently, but you've actually just finished releasing your series of videos. This isn't actually a part of the question. Sorry, everybody. This is a me thing. You've just finished releasing your videos for the Massive Nyarlathotep. Like, you have done all of these kind of companion films now, haven't you?
Yes.
Can you just tell us about that? Because I think it's such an amazing resource.
It took way longer than I was anticipating it to. So I'm like, I feel so much better now that it's done. but I was making the videos that I wish I would have had when I was running this campaign. So I break down, I do a spoiler free review for players and keepers that can watch that. But then I do an overview for keepers that are just starting to get into it, and then individual chapter breakdowns for each of the locations that your players will go to. Really breaking down like key NPC locations, my top tips from actually running the campaign. And it's awesome. It was so fun. And I really hope that it helps people.
I think it's amazing. I think speaking for myself, I know. And one of the reasons why we do what we do with the Playhouse is I absolutely absorb things so much better. The kinesthetic learner, this sense of watching it and being able to experience it. I actually, sometimes I can struggle just sitting down and reading things over and over and over and retaining that knowledge. Running something like Massive Nyarlathotep, having those videos would be an absolute godsend for me. And I know they are for a lot of people because they're very popular, which is amazing.
They are quite popular. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's absolutely fantastic. I will stop monopolizing your time now, Leslie, and we'll go to some questions. So the first question we have this evening is from what I would call probably one of your biggest fans, and that's Stu Sellens from here at the Playhouse. So Stu's asking, and I do love this question, he asks it to everybody, what got you started with TTRPGs in the first place?
Great question. So I was in college when I was first exposed to this whole world. My now husband was the one that kind of roped me into it. And he was freshman year and he was like, oh, I'm just getting a group of people together to play a game. No big deal. And I'm like, okay. And I show up and there's this giant box of dice. And I'm like, Wait, dice have more than six sides? I don't understand what's going on.
Your dice are broken.
Yeah, exactly. And I, the first game that I played was Dark Heresy, which is a Warhammer 40K role-playing game. It's a blast, by the way. And I quickly realized a few things about role-playing games. One is it's an immediate bonding activity and a very quick shortcut to get to know people and get to experience that socialization with other people, which I really love and enjoy. Two, it gets my brain firing on all cylinders. It's just the creativity sparks once I'm at the table and it just flows and it's fun. And the last thing I learned was basically that I want to do this all the time.
Isn't that the thing? You start playing these games and they're little hooks and they don't let go. 100%.
They don't let go.
So is your partner, your husband, is he kind of, you know, kind of looking at what you're doing now and just kind of going, that's me. That was my fault.
He takes credit all the time. He's like, okay, you know that I'm the one that got you into this, right? I'm like, I know.
Nice. Okay, I like that. I like that. Yeah, yeah. Yes, and thank you. Yes. Okay. So we've got a couple of questions here from Charles Matthew Dumain, who is brilliant, kind of does he's part of the Playhouse. He's our French counterpart. He's got a beautiful voice. Charles, if you're listening, you have a beautiful voice. So Charles's first question is, you're playing a lot of scenarios to review them, but you also have a critical eye as an editor. Was there a few times when you were surprised by the fact that it played better than it read?
So surprised? No, I don't think I've experienced that. And that's basically because I have a pretty good concept for how something's going to translate to the table. So I would say there are a lot of times that I do read things and I say, I think this can play better than it reads, but I'm not surprised by it when it gets to the table. And that's really when keepers are willing to put in the effort to make it translate well, which if I'm running a scenario, I'm putting in that effort. I'm trying to make it the best that it can be for my players. So I think in those cases, it's usually times where clues aren't very well-defined, or if something is too linear, sometimes that can be a flag to me that it might not translate to the table very well. Other instances might be that the handouts aren't very user-friendly and I have to do some working with maps or some extra work on the side to get it to a state that I really feel confident in bringing it to the table. So yeah, I think that's my short answer to, I've never been surprised by it, but I can pretty easily tell when I need to put in the extra effort to make it go well. Yeah.
And is that quite an instantaneous, like you can look at something and go, okay, I can see the potential, but I can kind of also tell I'm going to have to put some, you know, elbow grease in.
For sure. And I think that's like, as I'm reading throughout, if I'm as the keeper, if I'm getting lost, then I know that's a flag that my players are probably going to be lost.
Yeah.
So I really have to take the time to flip back pages, connect all the dots, do some extra effort and work to make sure that I completely understand the scenario and the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. I like that. Charles also asks, he says, you've got a lot of videos, either reviews or advice. And there's lots of Call of Cthulhu or Cyberpunk. But he asks, what kind of video do you prefer to produce and why?
Yeah. So I prefer to produce the videos that are the Miskatonic Repository scenario reviews. Those are my favorite out of all the videos that I do. And the reason for that is I enjoy the more material impact that I see from those videos, because the individual creators are not getting as much support as Chaosium big publishers inherently have. So when I am supporting other creators and putting out these reviews for their scenarios, I feel like very connected to the community, which gives me a lot of joy and fulfillment.
Okay, that's really lovely, because I think that's, there's a lot of the community, they follow you, they watch you, and you know, the Playhouse, we spend, you know, our time is the Miskatonic Repository community, and I think, you know, there's a reason you're so well thought of, Leslie, within the community. Oh, thank you. And I think, I think it is because, you know, people recognize that you do champion a lot of people's work, which is a really positive thing, a really lovely thing, actually, especially if the work deserves it as well.
For sure.
So last question from Charles, because you have to put a stop on him at some point. And he says, if you had no budget, no limit, what kind of video would you love to make one day?
Oh, I love this question. And it got my brain going, what potential is there out there in the world? I think I would absolutely love to do short cosmic horror films. So yes. like I'm thinking Magnus Archives YouTube style.
Nice.
And bringing that to the screen. Not necessarily that I think I have the skill set yet to be able to do something like that, but it would be super cool.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Just those short little stories, short little things that you could do. Really lovely little production projects that you can get through. Okay. Well, when you start doing that, make sure you give me a call.
I'm sold.
So we've got a question now from Zoe Sellens, and Zoe says, can you give us your one golden tip for first time keepers and or writers?
Yes. You said one tip, but I'm going to give you two. Mm-hmm. So my first tip is get involved with the community and rely on other people to help you, because you're going to have a lot of questions and that's totally okay. But there are a ton of people who have been where you are now. and you can ask those questions and get support and get in the right direction of where you need to go from other people's experiences.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So a wealth of knowledge, isn't there? Absolute wealth of knowledge. Sure. Yeah.
And then my second tip is a little more ethereal, I guess. It's have confidence in yourself to try new things. Trying new things is scary, but you've done it before all throughout your life. You will continue to try new things. Go into it with an open mind and you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. And Zoe will. Zoe's awesome. So go for it, Zoe. Go big and then go home. Okay. So we've got a couple of questions now from our old pal, Bridget Jeffries. Whoop, whoop, Bridget from the Symphony. Huge friend of everybody, Bridget, really. She's a friend of everybody. And obviously from Chaosium as well. So Bridget's first question is, what's the most common error or correction that you find when you're editing?
Yeah, this is also a two-part answer. The first one I'm going to give in relation to people who are newer to this, less experienced in creating this content. And then I'm going to give a tip for people who have maybe been doing it for a longer period of time. With beginners, the number one correction that I'm having to address is not telling keepers right away what's going on.
Yeah.
So if you think about the five W's, who, what, when, where, and why, that needs to be told right away. Don't keep secrets from me. It's not a short story. I don't want to know the twist. I want to know it right away.
Yeah.
And also, I think the why gets overlooked sometimes. As a keeper, it's very important for me to understand the motivation of whatever big bad or whatever situation is unfolding in your scenario. And I think this can apply to both humans and monsters. I think sometimes when we're thinking, well, it's just a beast that's attacking this village, what motivation is there? It's a beast. Go a little bit deeper. Why is the beast motivated to attack? Is it hungry? Does it get pleasure from attacking? Is it following a great old one? Like, what is actually happening underneath the covers that the keeper needs to know to be able to translate it to the table?
I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? It might not even be something that the investigator becomes aware of, but the keeper needs that motivation to be able to play it authentically.
That's exactly right. And to be able to read the rest of the scenario with that frame of mind. Like, if you already know the reason why, then everything else in the scenario will click easier for you as you're prepping.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's really good advice. Thank you, Leslie. I think that is for as you say, for first time writers, for you know, writers that have been doing this for years and years and years. That's really good advice to kind of click onto. So Bridget's other question
one second.
Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to also give advice for people who have been doing it for a little bit longer as well.
Please.
So for more experienced creators, something I do still see is assuming that keepers can retain small details throughout reading your scenario. So it's in your head, you know everything that's going on. So it can be sometimes difficult to remember that a keeper won't necessarily remember 10 pages back a clue that you found in the wine cellar. Like, why is that important? And why is it showing up again? So my tip is to don't be afraid to repeat information and be redundant, because I, as a keeper, would rather be too clear, too understanding of what's going on. I'd rather that situation than have to wonder what's going on and flip back pages and try and connect the pieces.
So if you're reading it as a keeper, you'd prefer to kind of see something, even if it's like a remember, and then you're kind of going, oh yeah, I know that, and then carry on.
Exactly.
The fact that it's there to flag it up again is something you're kind of saying, yeah, that's really helpful.
Absolutely. And if I'm skipping over it as a keeper, that's not a problem. That is there. Like, I just take a little bit of brain power to skip it. But for those people who may not remember reading it back, it can be super helpful and just make the planning process a lot smoother.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you. This is really sound advice, Leslie. This is a bloody good interview.
Good.
On your part. The answers are really good, I should say. Really good. Thank you. Okay, so this is Bridget's second question. Bridget asks, when creators reach out to you to inquire about your services, what are the key things that you need to know or want to be asked?
Yes. The number one thing that I want to know is where you are development-wise in your scenario. So people come to me at different stages. I want to know, do you have an idea, but you haven't started drafting yet? Are you partly through a very messy first draft? Do you have a full first draft? Where are you in that process? And by the way, I accept people at all points of that process, but it just kind of depends on how I can best serve you. So I need that information to know how we're going to structure working together and how I can best come to help and support you throughout that process. So yeah, I want to know where you are in the development stage. I want to know what kind of editing that you think that you need. Sometimes the editing process can be a little bit unknown or confusing for people who are not used to it or haven't worked with editors before. There's developmental editing. Sometimes people use line editing, copy editing, and proofreading if we're going the whole nine yards. So those different stages will factor into how much I know that you're aware of the different editing stages, and that helps me to guide you as well. So I focus on the developmental pieces, which is really the core content, reviewing NPCs, monster stats, the clues, making sure that everything is flowing well and in a good way, that we don't have keepers slipping between pages, sanity, balance, and counterbalance, all that good stuff. So yes, I want to know what kind of editing that you think you need.
Yeah.
And then any major concerns going into the editing process, like, are there things in the scenario that you kind of know is a problem, but you don't know how to fix it? I want to know that so that when I go through it, I have that frame of mind and I'm working through what you've already identified. And I think the last thing that's helpful is knowing the goal of your overall scenario, like what you want it to be and how much effort you are wanting to put into making it be successful. The reason why I want to know that is I can also be helpful in pointing you to different artists, layout artists, copy editors, different ways of promoting your work. And I can help throughout that process while we're working together. But I kind of need to know where you think the scenario can go to be able to help you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And again, yeah, that's just, I think that's really important that, yeah, you're there, you're talking about the different types of editing services as well. And I think that there's significant difference, isn't there, between what you're saying there about being a developmental editor in terms of how it actually plays, how it all connects, that connective tissue. And then, like you said, copy editor, where we're looking at spelling, punctuation, grammar, structure. Yeah, there's very different products, aren't they?
For sure. Yeah. And different skill sets.
Yes. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Thank you. Well, so the next question, or this is the thing, you're in demand. We've got series of questions from people. You kind of say, has anyone got a question? They're like firing off five or six questions. So this is from John Hedge, our very own John Hedge from the Playhouse. And Hedge says, you've got a known tendency to play through and deep dive into the scenarios you review. Why do you choose this style over publishing more content quickly in an age where constant content is considered the road to success? And I think this is something that's very close to Hedge's heart. He's very interested in this kind of like review release style.
Yeah, I think one, it can be tempting to kind of get caught up in the, I have to post kind of thing, keep up with the algorithm, do the things. But I try my best not to get caught up in that because I want to feel really good about everything I'm putting out there. And for me, that this style of content is the way that I do that. I really feel like, one, the creators that are coming to me wanting reviews, they put in so much time and energy into creating this product and the scenario. And so it feels good to me to give back just a fraction of that time and energy that they're putting into their product. So being able to give back to the community in that way feels, it just feels nice and good. And also I enjoy supporting keepers. So that you reference like deep diving into the work is not just doing a deep review, but it's giving tips for keepers to actually play the scenarios. At the end of the day, people want their scenarios played at the table and have people have fun with them. Like that's the goal. So being able to help keepers actually execute that at the table, I think just benefits everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I do want to have a quick note about other review styles out there that are a little bit quicker turnaround or that just read scenarios over playing them. I think that there is a place in the community for that type of review because it's very timely. It helps people, creators in the moment, get attention to their scenarios and work that gets out there, whereas my work kind of hits later in the life cycle. So yeah, after it's been out for a while, then they get an extra little boost of attention after it's been through some promotion and through some other things. So I think I would say I see value in both sides and types of reviews, but I personally enjoy the process and feel really good about taking my time.
Yeah, I think you're right there. They are very uniquely different products there, aren't they? The fact that if a reviewer is looking at a scenario and it's, I'm looking at the book or the PDF, I'm reading it through.
Yep.
Pros, cons, you know, that's that kind of quick touch, got it, right, okay, I can see whether I want to have a look at this. Whereas if we're looking at a longer term but more in depth, played it through, this is what it's like to read, this is what it's like to play, this is what it's like for the investigators, it's a different product, isn't it? It's a different stage in the scenario's lifespan. Okay, cool, brilliant. John's next question, because he's so nosy, he says, what's the goal of your channel? What are you trying to achieve with your work? I'd like to hear that the answer is global domination, but we'll see what you go with.
That might be, but I'm not going to tell people that right away.
Oh, so okay.
Just kind of keep that back there. I think one, this will probably grow and evolve as I grow and evolve, and as it has since I first started my channel. When I first started, I actually did Lovecraft short story reviews. That was what I started my channel on, which I'm thinking about bringing that back, actually, because I really enjoy doing them.
Yeah.
And when I initially started my channel, it was very much just a creative outlet and more selfishly motivated, I suppose, just trying to try new things and get the creativity out there. But then I actually saw that it was helping people and I was like, wow, okay, this can actually do something. So I think right now where I'm at is my goal is just supporting other creators, supporting people who want to be GMs and keepers, and overall showing people that the role-playing game community is very welcoming and you shouldn't be scared to try it and you shouldn't be scared to join games because we love new people in the community and we want to welcome everyone.
That is such a lovely and global domination.
Lovely.
This is a little bit like Charles. This is John's last question because I had to cut him off, like that person in a bar at the end of the night and you just have to send them home. Hedge's last question here is, with your deep dives, I assume you find a lot of hidden gems. Is there anything we should look out for when scrolling through DriveThruRPG to help us spot those diamonds in the rough?
Yeah, this is a good question that I don't have a good answer to. And the reason why is I actually get the scenarios come to me, so I don't have to do a lot of digging on DriveThruRPG. But I do want to maybe flip the question a little bit and tell creators, if you think you have a diamond in the rough, maybe here are some things that you can do to give it a little bit more attention on DriveThruRPG. The first thing is get reviews, easy. We talked about that. But also get them on your DriveThruRPG page where people can do ratings and make comments all directly on that page. It's just nice to get some social proof if people are scrolling through scenarios and they see something has a 5-star rating.
Yeah, yeah.
We naturally are going to gravitate towards that versus something that has 0 ratings. So getting reviews, getting involved in the community, that just naturally lends itself to sharing what you're working on and what you're excited about, which can bring people to your work. And the last thing, which I'm kind of throwing out there, is consider changing the cover of your scenario if you don't think that it's grabbing people's attention.
Yeah.
And I'm using that from my YouTube knowledge. I have to spend quite a bit of time on my thumbnails to make sure that they actually stand out from the various scrolling people have on their phones. So spend a little time looking at the top 10 or top 20 in the Miskatonic repository. What sticks out to you about those covers? Why are you drawn to them? What elements can you apply from those to your own work that perhaps could make it stand out more when people are scrolling and trying to look for those?
Yeah, that's really good advice. I think that is, yeah, we do see a lot of, you know, there are some outstanding artists, but also layout editors, layout designers. Mm-hmm. You know, there are books, you know, that are published within our community that are just beautiful. They, you know, they are toe for toe with, shall we say, you know, some of the kind of the professionally produced products, because they are that good. The time and the love, the care, and the, you know, the work that goes into them is an absolute testament to it. So I think that's something I always tell my students, is you look at what is outstanding, and then you steal it and you make it your own, because that's kind of how it works. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Yeah. Good turnaround on the question. We are right. We're back to Stu here, Stu Sellens. And we talked about a little bit about your massive Nyarlathotep run that you've done, the entire run. But Stu's question is, now that you've finished your massive Nyarlathotep run, any plan for deep dives on other campaigns?
Yes, making no firm promises, because I have not finish any campaigns yet, so I need to finish playing them before I would actually make content on them. But on my wish list of future, what I would love to kind of cover, I have Horror on the Orient Express, A Time to Harvest, The Two-Headed Serpent, and A Cold Fire Within, which are all Chaosium published campaigns.
Nice. Well, I don't want to persuade you in any one direction, but literally, what day are we on now? Monday. Yesterday, last night, I rolled up my character and started as a player, very lucky, Horror on the Orient Express. So I'm very excited about it. I'm just very excited, actually, that I get to be a player, because for such a long time, it's the forever keeper syndrome.
Sure.
But this landed in my lap, so much so that Pete from the Playhouse is also joined in as well. But we had my regular keeper, just kind of turned around one day and just went, "So, thinking about running one of the big Chaosium ones." I was just like, okay, what are we doing? And eventually he said, "Think Horror on the Orient Express." Just couldn't be happier.
Awesome. So exciting.
Yeah, really excited. So I will play in it, and then I'll watch all your videos on it, and then I'll run it in years to come. So there you go. That's the circle of life. Cycle of life. Right. So two last questions. One is from Sophie Taylor. Sophie asks, what would you like to see in the Call of Cthulhu arena more? This could be setting, time, location, mythos. What do you want to see?
What gets me really excited is when people create their own mythos. So unique creatures, cults, and spells, that's what gets me really excited. So I'd love to see more of that.
And I think, those things, when they come out as well, I think especially for those of us that have been playing for a long time, if you get to keep a new material, or you're a player and something new comes along that you don't go, Night and Gore, or you don't go,
right,
this is, you know, it's one of them. It's quite exciting, isn't it? Not knowing, which is kind of the big fun of the game as well. You know, our squishy little investigators, they don't necessarily know all these things. So you have that player investigator knowledge gap. Whereas if we genuinely don't know because it's brand new stuff, it's really exciting.
Yeah, like there's always room for deep on hybrids because they're amazing, but everyone knows about them.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I always remember this actually from a couple of years ago. It was Mike Mason in one of the community talks that I think Alan Carey set up. And I remember Mike talking about, I think what was the phrase he was using, this idea of subverting the norm. You know, if you going to use something that is, you know, tropey or recognizable, it's great, it's exciting because we know it and we love it for a reason, but do it in a different way, do it in an exciting way, do it in a new way, do it in a way that is going to make your keeper go, oh, this is cool, and your investigators go, what the hell's going on?
That's a good point.
But I think I talk about that quite a lot, actually, because it's just one of those things, you know, when someone says something, it just sticks with you, you kind of go, yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. Oh, just before we move on from that, like setting and time, do you have like a preferred setting of time, or do you have one that you kind of go, oh, I've never done this and I'd love to do it?
So preferred is 1920s. I love the feel. It's a classic for a reason. It's awesome. I recently have really been getting into Regency. I have enjoyed playing Regency quite a bit. And I don't know if there's a time that I am like yearning for necessarily. I feel like I enjoy trying new time frames, but there's not one that's coming to mind that I'm like, oh, I wish I had this.
Yeah, it's just it's something I muse on occasionally because I can't remember who I was talking to about it actually a while ago, but there I might have been Paul Fricker actually. We were talking about time periods and the idea that of like 1930s or 1940s or you know, 50s, that I don't know, something with the 1920s. I almost feel that it's comfortably far enough that it's different, it's super different, but it's also not so far that, you know, that we don't know what it was, so we can role play it with a level of authenticity and fun with that. But bizarrely then something like the 30s and the 40s, you kind of go,
you kind of have to like remind yourself what was happening.
Big war going on in the 40s. I remember all that, but you put me and I think, you know, I think there's just a little bit of I don't know. I think it'd be really interesting, actually. I'd like to dive into some stuff in some slightly underused decades. But I think the 1920s, you're right, it's just such a classic, isn't it? And
it is,
such a visual kind of classic as well.
Also, I love how much I've learned about history from playing this game.
Yeah.
So much more than I've learned in my history classes in high school.
Yeah, I tell you what, especially for me, especially with the Regency stuff, running a big campaign and playing in some cool games as well, I feel like my knowledge of the Regency era has just kind of exploded.
For sure.
100%. which is good. Right, we are at our last question, and we obviously save the best to last. So this is Bridget Jeffries signing off with two very important questions. Number one, how did you get to be so awesome? And number two, were you born like this or did you take classes?
Thank you, Bridget. I did not take any classes about how to be awesome, but I would say that what makes me awesome is the people around me, because they make me look so much better and lift me up. And that's just what I want to do too, is lift other people up. So thank you.
That is a lovely sentiment. And I think a general message there, people, if you're at home, go and find the person who is nearest to you and just pick them up. Just lift them up. Go and do it right
lift
now.
Lift them up.
Zero context.
I have been working out more, so maybe I can carry my husband. I'm not sure.
I like it. Leslie, thank you so much for coming onto the Playhouse and doing a backstage chat. Can I just ask you to remind our wonderful listeners, our wonderful folk at home, where we can find you, what we can find you doing, and yeah, give us the good news.
Absolutely. So you can find me on my YouTube channel, XP Love Cat. If you would like to work with me, you can go to my website, check out what services I offer, both developmental editing for role-playing games and fiction. And I also have a Patreon. It's mostly just a tip jar if you feel like you're able to support me a little bit more and keep my channel more sustainable. That is great. But if not, I appreciate everyone just watching my content and being involved with the community.
Thank you, Leslie, and a huge thank you, you know, because we got to play recently in Lumen Lucidity Regency scenario, which was great fun. Awesome. It's really nice to hang out with you again. Really lovely.
Yeah, it was great.
And Playhouses, thank you so much for joining us. You, as you know, can find all of the scenarios that we've done at www.miskatonicplayhouse.com. You can find our Ko-fi, or as I call it, Ko-fi, but actually it's called Coffee, apparently.
I
feel like they should call it Ko-fi because I keep calling it that, but it almost feels like they've tricked me on that. But our coffee, if you would like to support us or get a VIP pass, or there's some scenarios on there that are available to rent. Fantastic work there. We are at ko-fi.com/Miskatonic Playhouse. So please come along and support us, but also just come and check out our work. And if you like what we're doing, get in touch. If you write scenarios, get in touch, let us know. We're looking to build up our library of scenarios so we can dive in and pick one out and then produce it as an actual play to promote your work and show people one way how to play it. And I would stress that it's going to be one particular way how to play it where people watch it and go, oh, I wouldn't do that. That's us. You can find us doing that. But from Leslie and I, we'd like to say thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time when the curtain rises again. Thank you very much.
As we draw the curtain on tonight's performance, we thank you for joining us and look forward to inviting you back to the Miskatonic Playhouse. In the meantime, you can also find us in the links below. And if you'd like to submit your scenario for us to play, email miskatonicplayhouse@gmail.com.